No one likes to feel stuck, especially by your cloud. But the IBM cloud is the most open and secure public cloud for business. It can manage all your apps and data anywhere. Smart loves problems. IBM, let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/flexible.
All right, Lisa, as they take a knee collectively, boos can be heard.
Our players, coaches, and owners will now meet in the south end zone and lock arms in a sign of unity.
It was a team thing. Trump can't divide this.
I salute Colin Kaepernick for being as powerful as he was, being the one that he had to fall on the sword, unfortunately. And I hate that. And I hope that some NFL owner, I wish I owned an NFL team right now, I'll sign him today.
Country's an embarrassment in the world.
It's land of the free. But we still have problems just like everybody else.
The beautiful thing is that people are starting to wake up.
Breaking news here. U.S. prosecutors are charging 10 people, including four college basketball assistant coaches, on counts related to corruption in college basketball recruiting.
What you see may change your perception of any sporting event. Get this. Shoot this.
Welcome to Outside the Lines. I'm Bob Lee. More presidential tweets after a Monday night compromise, with football and sports more politicized than ever. That's our big story today. Understand that the president of the United States is staying on this topic because he feels keenly it is winning for him, winning from outside the mainstream media and coastal elites. For him, it's simply politics. And for pro athletes, most publicly, largely African-American NFL players, it is about equality. Last night, for the most powerful man in the NFL, it was about finding a safe middle ground between the two. Jerry Jones, a million-dollar contributor to Donald Trump's inauguration, had been one of the two NFL owners without any public comment since the president on Friday urged the firing of any NFL players to kneel during the national anthem, and Mr. Trump called them SOBs. Last night in Glendale, Arizona, Jones, whose franchise was recently valued by Forbes at $4.8 billion, led his players and coaches in kneeling before the national anthem. Cowboys then locked arms during the playing of the national anthem, as did the Arizona Cardinals players. No players on either team kneeled during the actual singing of the national anthem last night. Now, this morning, among four NFL-related tweets, President Trump said today on Twitter, the booing at the NFL football game last night when the entire Dallas team dropped to its knees was loudest I have ever heard. Great anger, end quote. CNN is reporting today that the president last night at a private dinner at the White House, speaking of his Friday comments about NFL player protests, Mr. Trump said, it's really caught on. It's really caught on. I said what millions of Americans were thinking, end quote. This, according to someone who was attending that dinner. Last night, Jerry Jones said he wanted to focus on unity and equality. He would not comment on the president's call to fire any kneeling players or his characterization of those players as SOBs.
You have no opinion on the president's comments?
Well, I want our actions to be louder than words.
Are you disappointed that he's
and we did it. We made our statement regarding the two issues that I'm talking about, and we made our were able to do it and basically respect in front of the nation that wanted to watch the game, basically show our respect for the flag.
Jones had said prior to the president making this an issue that the anthem was solely a time to honor the flag and the United States. Last night's pre-anthem kneel carved out a safe space for him. As former NFL team executive Andy Dolich tells the New York Times this morning, quote, this issue is about protecting the shield. There's a subliminal dollar sign in that shield, so it's fair to be cynical. Jones' pre-anthem kneeling solution capped an eventful Monday, a collision of presidential politics, personal freedom of speech, and national reaction. San Antonio Spurs coach Greg Popovich, who served 5 years in the Air Force and has been an outspoken critic of the president, yesterday redoubled that criticism.
The childishness and the gratuitous fear-mongering and race-baiting has been so consistent that it's almost expected. Our country's an embarrassment in the world.
And much of LeBron James' press conference upon the opening of Cavaliers training camp was spent on the president's criticism of those who protest and the reality across the NFL on Sunday as approximately 200 players kneeled to express their stance on racial equality.
I do understand that this is not a disrespect to the men and women who have served our world to help us become free. It's not about that. And the people that's trying to divide us are the ones who are trying to say that is a disrespect to the military families and to the people who served our country. It is not about that.
So the tweets continue from Washington. The protests likely will across the country. Here is our Friday 4 grouping on a very busy Tuesday. Ryan Smith, Jeremy Shapin in New York City, Kate Fagan. What did you think about what Mr. Jones did last night? Strategically adept, adroit, meaningful?
Strategically adept. It sounds like you've got some view there. Here's what I thought. When I first saw it, I have to admit I paused and I said, oh, what's he really trying to accomplish there? No anthem is playing. But when I thought about it, and I thought about all the criticism he's been getting for not kneeling during the anthem, I thought about the idea that we need to, for people that are trying to speak out, for people that are trying to send a message, what is wrong with the message that he tried to send by kneeling with the team before the anthem? Think about it this way. There is so much talk about President Trump trying to divide us. What divides us more than when you're trying to send a message saying, I knelt, these people knelt, you didn't, what's your problem, what are you going to do about it? That is not, I think, what this is all about accomplishing. When you think about Kaepernick, he didn't ask other people to do what he was doing. He wanted to send his own message about social injustice and inequality. So I think what Jones did was his perspective and his right.
And we heard the reaction last night. And the president was correct. It was substantial.
And it's also important to remember here that, you know, by not choosing to kneel during the anthem, by standing during the anthem and in the presence of the flag, people are also making a decision not to cede those symbols to the president, which is an important message in and of itself. They don't want to set up a dichotomy where, you know, I disagree with Donald Trump, so I am not going to stand during the anthem, or I disagree with Donald Trump, so I am going to turn my back in some sense on the flag. Symbols are important, perhaps more important now than ever before. And if you just do what's expected, you're giving him the power of those symbols, which is not what they want to do.
Yeah, there were conversations, Kate, between each the teams on the day. And at one time, there was a talk of a coordination here. What'd you think of what you saw last night?
Well, I appreciate Ryan's point there about this middle ground that Jerry Jones and the Cowboys and a lot of NFL teams have reached when it comes to this show of unity, and either like they did last night, kneeling before the anthem or just locking arms. I guess my concern is that we have moved away from the specific issue that was being protested to now more of a concept of unity. And now I think of unity as a very important issue, but it does then immediately beg the question, what are we unified for? What are we unified against? And that's where the message is being muddled, because what I'm hearing a lot of times when you say, like, oh, we're showing unity, well, right now it seems like there's unity in the NFL against Trump and Trump saying players should be fired. So then the unity becomes we're unified in the right of players to kneel or to speak up about these issues. And I don't know that that's necessarily under the kind of criticism or as difficult of a conversation to have as exactly the conversation of inequality in this country.
Yeah, I'll have a lot more of that a little bit later in the program on the BLT. As I said at the top of the program, the president he's doubling and tripling down on this. At dinner last night, four tweets today, one we didn't even show graphically, calling for the NFL to have a law, a rule against any kneeling, not even to talk about his comments about where will be the first owner to finally fire somebody, and also his comments Friday about CTE and the lack of violence in the game. But this is a winner, and people have to be careful to look through it through a prism of the whole country. And when you hear people booing as they booed in New England, as they booed in Tennessee, as they booed last night in Arizona, sometimes you have to take a step back and say, which filter are we listening and watching this through?
Well, what's interesting about this is Jones is getting skewered online for even kneeling before the anthem, just like he got booed in that stadium. I think Kate makes a great point. Unity, I think, here for some people is unity in the NFL against what Trump said. But there is still the undercurrent of what we're really talking about here, social injustice. That is what originally folks were sitting down, kneeling for, and that conversation still needs to happen. And I heard a very interesting discussion the other day about how this conversation doesn't happen unless it is uncomfortable for people. And I think that's what you're seeing. I think that is still getting through in some way.
And we have to remember as well, I think, I feel the conversation was dying down before last Friday, mm-hmm. before the president.
We hadn't said Kaepernick's name on this program in five, six days. Yeah.
So if we are going to have that conversation again about justice, about police brutality, about all the things that Colin Kaepernick says his protest originated with, then Donald Trump is the person who's bringing us back to that conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Now, we've had visible demonstrations, certainly in the National Football League. But the comments now from the NBA as camps open, certainly something to listen to. A couple of guys whose words carry weight in their game and beyond. This from yesterday.
He doesn't understand the power that he has for being the leader of this beautiful country. He doesn't understand how many kids, no matter the race, look up to the President of the United States for guidance, for leadership, for words of encouragement. He doesn't understand that. And that's what makes me more sick than anything.
And then there's the coach of the Spurs, Greg Popovich, who was a Soviet studies major in his days as a student at the Air Force Academy. He served 5 years in uniform, and yesterday speaking of the current climate in the country.
Obviously, you know, race is the elephant in the room, and we all understand that. But unless it is talked about constantly, it's not going to get better. People get bored. Oh, is it that again? They pull in a race card again. Why do we have to talk about that? Well, because it's uncomfortable. And there has to be an uncomfortable element in the discourse for anything to change.
We talked about the conversations. Kay, let me get with you. I don't know that we ever envisioned a day we'd be having a conversation about white privilege at the opening day of NBA training camp, but here's where we are in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Popovich there is someone who's bringing it back to race, but as we all sat here yesterday and we heard Trump say that in his mind, at least what he's saying is that this isn't about race. And so you've got that disconnect about exactly what conversation we're having, because we seem to be having two very different conversations. And I think for me, when we go back to the concept of unity, I mean, I think maybe you guys have seen this, but there was a Sports Illustrated cover talking about how the sports world is unifying in a world that seems to be divided. You have LeBron James on that cover, Steph Curry on that cover, even Roger Goodell. But the missing person there is Colin Kaepernick. And I think that's a relevant point, because this concept of sports unifying us is certainly, in a way, whitewashing the conversation, as opposed to really diving into what we want what athletes, at least the ones that are kneeling or speaking out, like we've heard Popovich and LeBron, what they really want it to be about.
Which is why we need people like LeBron and Popovich speaking like they did yesterday. I've heard so many people talking about why are these athletes talking about these issues? You got to watch a piece that Jeremy Schapp did about the evolution, right?
This ran this morning. Ran this morning.
TV.
About the evolution.
I thought I was
doing
that for exercise.
People forget.
You ran it, Jeff.
People forget that these athletes are speaking, from Kaepernick to LeBron, even Popovich. They are speaking for people who do not have a voice. They have experienced things. They can shed light on that. And it is so important to continue that conversation. So when people look at LeBron and they see that press conference and they say, why is he going off about this? Can't we just talk about basketball? That is to act as if he isn't human and that he doesn't have a perspective that he can share, and an informed, intelligent perspective at that.
And he's moved the conversation past what I call the scorekeeping aspect. Is anyone going to kneel? Is anyone going to raise a fist?
Right.
He basically said, I don't need to do any physical gesture, that my life's work speaks for itself.
Right.
And certainly he's put, I think, $40 million into an educational outreach program. So in that regard, he's certainly right. But
And he's evolved. He's really evolved.
Oh, he's become
his voice. He's gotten louder. He's become, I think, more confident in his voice. I remember a few years ago, I was at the game in Brooklyn where he came out in warm-ups wearing the I Can't Breathe shirt. And that was a big political statement from him at the time about police brutality.
Trayvon Martin, when he organized with the Heat, right?
Exactly. Yeah. But when I asked him about it, LeBron didn't want to get into details. He wanted to wear the shirt. He wanted that to be his statement.
The actions speaking louder than
right.
the words.
Right, exactly.
All right. As we continue, Kate, we're going to get you back here on in person, certainly, for the Friday 4.
We'll be there on Friday.
All right.
That's right.
Thanks so much. Next up, alleged college basketball corruption on a whole other level. In the B block today, a federal indictment of 10 men, including four assistant college basketball coaches, alleging that payments were made to high school and college players and also to the coaches to influence where players sign and also where they would play and which managers, financial advisors, and sportswear firms they would eventually sign with. Those charges now have more alleged recruiting abuses and move it to a never-before-seen level beyond the usual infractions. The coaches facing federal fraud and corruption charges are Chuck Person of Auburn. You remember him from 14 years playing in the NBA. Lamont Evans of Oklahoma State. Emmanuel Book Richardson at Arizona. And Tony Bland of Southern California.
The picture painted by the charges brought today is not a pretty one. Coaches at some of the nation's top programs soliciting and accepting cash bribes. Managers and financial advisors circling blue-chip prospects like coyotes. And employees of one of the world's largest sportswear companies secretly funneling cash to the families of high school recruits.
Also criminally charged, James Gatto. He's the director of global sports basketball marketing at Adidas. And Merrill Code, who recently left Nike to take a position at Adidas. Ryan Smith continues with me. He is a practicing and recovered attorney. Seth Greenberg is here. So we're going to talk the basketball aspect in just a second. But what the federal government, and by the way, they have a 93% conviction rate if you're scoring at home or you're in game, all right, alleging what, two basic conspiracies here?
Two different conspiracies here. One is college coaches working with managers and agents in order to secure players for those managers and agents once they graduate and go pro. The other is shoe companies, executives, and managers securing players from high school to play for these colleges, and then when they graduate and go pro, go and sign with the shoe company. So you've got two different conspiracies. What's interesting about this case is, and this is how the federal government does it on these kinds of conspiracy bribery cases, over two years in the making, hundreds of recordings, cooperating witnesses, they have it all. They have, for example, with Chuck Person, the details of him, apparently, according to the allegations, taking upwards of $90,000 to do these kinds of activities. So this is the kind of case that is very hard to beat. If you are a defendant, you're looking at it and you're saying, well, can I contrast the evidence? Do I have witness? Can I say I wasn't a part of the agreement to further the conspiracy? It's going to be tough to do when you've
got
cooperating evidence.
They got wiretaps.
They got everything.
A lot of wire. In fact, the U.S. attorney was putting the phone number out there at the press conference saying, if you know about more of this going on, call us.
Right. Very tough case to be.
Yeah, I'll get back to possible sentencing and what else we could see. All right. Are you shocked that we found gambling in a casino here, Coach, to borrow from Casablanca?
I'm not shocked because the culture of college basketball has changed over the last 10, 15, 5 years. And you think about it, back in the day when there was corruption, who was it? It was a booster, it was an alumnus, or it was the coach basically giving money, cash money, to a prospect. The culture of college basketball is the business of college basketball. So now all of a sudden, you know who's become more involved? Money managers, agents, and to some extent, shoe companies. Shoe companies invest in youth basketball, grassroots basketball, to develop relationships.
What age are kids identified? Really identified?
Well, they're identified at 13 years old. And there's competition between Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, and whomever else to get the best players in their product, all right, to align with their shoes. Obviously, why do you invest in grassroots basketball? To assist your college programs, all right? But here's the deal. Where I think the issue is right now, and maybe it wasn't in the past, money managers are a big part of the corruption in college basketball today. Money managers and agents, every good AU program, they have an alignment most definitely to a shoe company, but most AU programs also have an alignment to potentially a money manager and potentially an agent. So it really becomes a triangle where all three of those teams have a synergy working together, and that's obviously the underbelly of college athletics, and especially in the sport of basketball, where one or two players can make such a difference.
And then it becomes an issue with the coaches. One of the allegations in here is that a particular coach had a loan, needed money, and so one of the money managers said, hey, I can get to this guy, and I can communicate with him and steer players to you in exchange for helping him get money. I mean, that's the kind of thing I would imagine. And this is the kind of thing they want to uncover. This is all about the kids, right? You want to protect the kids.
But the kids are part of it. The kids are part of it also.
The government wants to protect the kids. I'm not saying the coaches and the money managers do.
But in the complaint, there's an allegation that one of these recruits in high school, he or his family is asking for $150,000.
No doubt about it. And that's the part I thought that the investigation, you know, obviously the money managers are greedy and invested in trying to secure the best players, all right? Obviously, the agents want to secure the best place. But right now, today, in our sport, the parents, all right, the guardians, the advisors, those people are initiating these conversations. Let's not fool ourselves, All right? Because
well, they're a commodity, and the system is using, employing them essentially, and there's value in their labor.
I will say,
but they're
though,
14 or 15 when they realize.
I will say, though, these suits are alleging that the coaches, that some of these money managers are going to the coaches, and the coaches are initiating this.
Those are some of the conversations that maybe they don't have, you know, per se on taped conversations, but there is two sides to this story. You know, look,
there's also
it's the culture.
The unnaming, if you will. They're unspecified universities. ESPN's reporting that one of the uncharged and unspecified schools in there, Louisville, if that is proven out and verified, and we're reporting it, what does that mean in 15 seconds for Rick Pitino?
They're going to have to make a change. They don't have a choice. Yeah. If that's verified with everything else that's gone on, there's no decision to be made. I can't see that Rick Pitino could remain the coach at Louisville if these things are actually true. And you said 93%.
Yeah. Conviction rate.
Conviction rate.
You and I will be talking about this a lot more, I think.
Oh, yeah. Just getting started.
Gentlemen, thank you. Next up, the one word you need to keep in mind with player activism. The Cubs and the Cardinals tonight. Cubs trying to lock up the Central. The Cardinals chasing the second wild card, 8 Eastern. It's also streaming on the ESPN app. And then after the game, it's SportsCenter at night. Those two handsome dudes. We got baseball. We got all the playoff highlights, latest in college football and the NFL news, and of course, SportsCenter at night on the ESPN app. Try as we might, it's very difficult to escape the scorekeeping phase of player protests. Who is kneeling? How many players? From which teams? And now the Jerry Jones variant, which sounds like a Robert Ludlum book title. When and how clever was that? Even after this last night, or maybe because of it, the extent the NFL has a strong coalition of public opinion on its side dates from Roger Goodell's initial statement Saturday morning. A former NFL player told me the other day of his regular conversations with Goodell, explaining to Goodell that in a majority black league, the young men who are the product see interaction with law enforcement as a basic existential issue for their communities, literally life and death. And he said NFL players need to feel that the league power structure gets this. More important than a labor contract, it's more important than player discipline. And this former player tells me Roger Goodell gets it. So if you're one of those booing those who kneel, the who and the when and the how, that's fine. That's absolutely your right. You also might want to ask yourself why. Why these men are taking a knee. And that just might begin that rarest of modern commodities, a conversation across the divide. See you tomorrow. 1 p.m. Eastern next time. NFL Live training. Thank you.